there, web or podcast listeners. I'm Andrea Lorien, one of the producers on Vermont Edition. And I wanted to let you know that what you're about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity. Short and sweet, right to the good stuff. Thank you.
Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Michaela Lafrac. As anyone who lives in a small town knows, the lives of the town's residents often overlap and intersect in many interesting ways. In Carolyn Keebler's novel, Liquid, Fragile, Perishable, the interlocking relationships of teenagers, newcomers, and longtime residents play out over the course of a year in the small, fictional Vermont town of Glenville. Carolyn Keebler lives in Middlebury, and she's the editor of the New England Review. Vermont Edition producer Andrea Lorien spoke with her in our studio recently. The conversation starts with Carolyn talking about the title of her book.
I think the obvious reason why it's called Liquid, Fragile, Perishable is because of the post office. We have our postal clerk, and of course that's something that she's going to rattle off day after day. And my editor actually asked me at one point, like, do you think this is really the title? Is this, would you be willing to consider another title? And I was like, sure, of course I'd be willing to consider it. But I'm telling you, I think this is the right title. And part of it is because I think it's so mundane. It's something that you hear in the post office every day. But I feel like it's also kind of poetic, right? I mean, it's also a little bit like, that's what we are. That's what human beings are. We're all liquid, fragile, and perishable. And so it's like, and I think that's a little bit what the book is about. It's about the way that, like, the super mundane stuff actually might be something other than we think.
Your novel begins in May. And as we're speaking right now, it is gorgeous outside. And when it comes to Vermont, it's often images of autumn or winter that tend to come to mind in popular culture. So I'd love to hear why you chose to start in the month of May.
Yeah, well, May is an amazing time in Vermont. In fact, I was just the other day saying to my husband, I think that May is the perfect month. May and September are really where it's at for Vermont. But I mean, I love all of the seasons, but I think May has this particular fresh start feel to it. I think even make one of my characters say it, that it's free heat for everyone. There's that relief you get when you don't have to put a coat on, and it's that day you just, it never gets old. It never gets old going outside without a coat, putting on your bicycle, and being warm.
Liquid, Fragile, Perishable is told through multiple perspectives. And I have to ask, how did you keep track of them all? All their comings and goings. Did you have a
chart? Yeah, I did. I had more, but I had narrowed it down a bit. So there's really only 10 of what I would call my speaking characters. Those are the ones who have not a first-person point of view, but it's kind of like having a first-person point of view. Those are the main characters of the book. And they're all connected. So none of them is completely separate from the others. And so I felt like I had a visual map in my head of the town. So I had a little pencil sketch on the bulletin board that I kept, and I knew where everybody lived, and I knew how they were all joined together and the ways in which they would meet throughout the course of the novel.
I wanted to ask you about that town, Glenville, Vermont.
Yeah.
It's fictional, but is it a stand-in for any particular town?
It's a conglomeration of different towns. So I wanted all of it. I wanted them to be able to walk into the river, and I'm thinking the New Haven River in Bristol. Mm-hmm. Also the swimming holes near Middlebury, at the Middlebury Gorge. I was thinking of Ripton and East Middlebury, but I was also thinking about this, other places I've gone camping and other places I've gone hiking. And I kind of wanted to put it all together in one. So I made up this kind of maybe quintessential small town Vermont place. And it's definitely fiction.
If you would put it on the map, would it be in Addison County, where Middlebury is?
It would probably be a little north.
Okay.
Well, I think Addison County is so dominated by dairy farming, and has also Middlebury College. And I kind of wanted to move away from the direct relationship to the things that I know that well, so that it could be really fiction. Because otherwise, I would just be writing about my neighbors, and I didn't want to do that.
The changing natural world is a character in itself, mm-hmm. in the book. I'd love to hear where that came from and how you decided to approach that as this character without a face?
Well, I think when you're in a state like Vermont, the weather is so important, and it is something you just can't really ignore. You're right there in it every day, whether you want to be or not. So that's definitely a part of it. But I think a lot about how much Vermont has changed just in the past 20 years since I've moved here. And how, so this book is really probably set more like around 2007, around there. And I know when I first moved here, we used to have a lot more days that were negative 30, that you would just have that frigid, frigid cold. And I feel like that's kind of, it's kind of dissipating. Like things are really changing here fast. And the flooding has been so intense. And, you know, this past summer was, for us, Irene, in Middlebury, wasn't that devastating of a flood. But this past summer, it was like twice. It just keeps happening. And so I think that those things are so close to us and they're so, they dictate our lives so much that I just, it doesn't, I can't imagine having it any other way. I mean, I think even if you're not in Vermont, you're going to be affected by the weather, by climate change, and by the things that are just not how they used to be.
One of the things that struck me about the book was the way the characters who are newcomers to Vermont collide with those whose families have been here for many generations. Could you tell me about the ways class, history, and family play a role in the novel?
Sure. Yeah, those are such important things. And I think that people think of Vermont as being a particular, there's a little bit of mystique about the state. I think that people think, oh, it's so beautiful, and it's true. And they think, oh, there's no billboards, there's no garbage. Well, some of that is somewhat true. But there's also all of the same problems that you're going to have everywhere else. And I think class is a huge one. I think that there's so much misunderstanding and so much resentment and so much people, you know, people have different ways of making meaning and people have different ways of finding work and finding love and all of these things. But they, I think class informs so much of it, especially what kind of work you're going to do. And I don't think that there's any work that's not, that can't be noble work, that can't be important work. We need everyone to do all the things that they do in order to make this place work. But I think that Vermont really does have a little bit of a greenwash over it that makes people think that it's just an idyllic place to be. And it's really just as complicated as anywhere else. Mm.
You told the Addison Independent that you started and stopped many novels and stories over the years, which I think any writer listening can relate to. And once you dug in, you had a blast with it. What was it about this novel in particular that made you stick it out?
I think this was the first time I really felt like I figured out how to write a novel. Now, it's not maybe a typical novel or doesn't really look like one on the page, but it was the one that felt right to me. It felt like my own, was really my own thing. It was doing all of what I wanted a novel to do, which was to have, it's like a container for all of the observations and obsessions and feelings and the things that you worry about and wonder about and for all of the people you've encountered and conversations you've had. And it just felt like I could finally find a shape for it all and put it all together. So that's, I think, why I really stuck with this one and decided, and not only stuck with finishing it and revising it, but stuck with the process of finding a publisher.
Your writing style is unique for fiction. It's one or two sentences, maybe three at the most, per paragraph, and it reminded me of poetry. So could you tell us how you honed your style? I know you write essays, but do you have a background in poetry?
I don't have a background in poetry, but I do read a lot of poetry. At the New England Review, we publish a ton of new poetry. So I'm reading it constantly, though I've never written poetry, except for, you know, in high school in my 20s, I did some. But I think that I just, I felt I needed to slow down. There's a way in which so much writing, it just keeps going and going and going. And it's like, where do you start? Which details do you leave out? And so the way that I ended up writing this was, well, the first scene with Nell was the first scene that I wrote. And that's when I was like, okay, this is how I'm going to do this. This really sounds right to my ear. It feels right to me. Can I make this, can I sustain this? I wasn't really sure, but then I was like, I'm going to just try. So I was like, well, let me bring in another character and see if I can still do that. And well, what about this one? And then what about when plot starts to come in? And it seemed like it was still working. And I felt like the rhythm was really important to me and that it just encourages you as a reader to take a breath once in a while and to really just let the patterns become visible rather than just be obsessed with what's going to happen. So I felt like that was really the key that unlocked being able to write this book.
You weren't obsessed with the plot of it. You were looking at
The patterns. Yeah, I mean, I think it becomes like by having a lot of small paragraphs, it gives the reader a chance to stop them for themselves for just briefly, you know, not even a whole second, but just to kind of absorb and maybe see things a little bit differently and maybe notice things a little bit differently. And so patterns can come out and you can start to see maybe how like weaving and how bees and how all of these different threads are starting to come together that you wouldn't necessarily notice if you were just sort of pushing forward to figure out what's going to happen next.
What do you think are some misconceptions about the editing process?
Gosh, I think people are afraid that editors are going to want to run over them and maybe want to change everything to sound more like the editor would have made them sound. And maybe some editors have worked that way. But I think for me as an editor, the most fun thing about it is being able to sort of try to inhabit the way that that other mind is thinking. How did that writer, like if I find a part that's a little confusing, I don't want to detangle it into my own words. I want to be like, well, how would they put it? So it's a real challenge and it's very fun. I think people are afraid, though, that editors really are just going to be like, okay, so, you know, you're a writer, you gave me your stuff, now let me make it mine, right? And that's just not how it works.
You've worked in many different aspects of publishing. You've been an editor, you've worked in marketing, book selling, you've publicized events. How have those past experiences helped you in your novel's publishing journey?
They helped me be a little bit humble, I think. I think they make me realize that there are a lot of books out there. There are a lot of really interesting books out there. And there are a lot of people trying to figure out what to read next, and a lot of people vying for that attention. So I think it's just made me feel like, I'm going to put out this book and whatever happens, happens. I don't expect it to change the world or become a bestseller or any of that stuff. I just want to put out something that will maybe be meaningful to a couple of readers. And that is definitely meaningful to me. When we first put out Rain Taxi Review of Books, we made a huge, it was a huge effort, as you can imagine, starting from nowhere. And I remember putting the magazine out and just being so nervous, like what's going to happen? And kind of nothing happened, right? Like, some people read it and some people found and some people, but they don't necessarily even tell you if something happened. So a reader's going to read a book. I just assume everyone read it. They loved it. It changed their lives for the better. And they just didn't bother to tell me. So I think that that's just a kind of a way to stay humble and also to stay a little bit realistic about all of the publishing and writing that's going on out there.
I'm curious to hear what writers you find yourself turning to again and again.
Well, I love that question because there are so many. I don't know if you know the writer Catherine Davis. She's a novelist. She lives in Montpelier some of the time. She's an incredible writer. But she was doing this class for Public Space where it was based on the idea that the book that you fall in love with first will always be part of your writerly DNA. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. I wonder what that would be for me, hoping that I could say it was Emily Dickinson or Dolaire's Greek Myths or something like that. But I had to admit, you know, it was probably Richard Scarry. It was probably Busy Town by Richard Scarry.
I mean, love that.
Right? I mean, that book is like, I loved it. I looked at it so many times. So, I mean, I think that if I think about that book, I'm like, oh, yeah, that really is in this novel. I do think that there's a little bit of Richard Scarry in here. But then, of course, I moved on. And then there was Catherine Patterson and the sort of emotional books that you read when you're young. And then I really fell in love with the modernists. Virginia Woolf is hands down like my desert island author. Catherine Mansfield is quite good, too. So I love those kinds of books. And then lately, I've been reading a little bit more just about the physical world. I've been reading a lot of books about trees. I've been reading a lot of books about just like nature, the world around me. I think Annie Dillard and her metaphysical approach to things is becoming another favorite. I love Ellen Bryant Voigt's poetry. She writes about Vermont a lot too, and the rhythms of her language are just wonderful.
That was Middlebury author Carolyn Keebler speaking with Vermont Edition producer Andrea Lorien about her new novel, Liquid Fragile Perishable.